Hey superstars, welcome back to Misbehaved, where breaking news meets breaking barriers. I'm your host, Hallie Burton, and this is the very first episode of our brand new sub-series, Mental Health in the Media. Each month, we'll take a closer look at how mental health is being talked about in the headlines, in pop culture, and all across social media. We'll dig into current events, explore real statistics, and break down psychological studies so we can understand how the media impacts the way we think and feel about mental health. Now, you might be wondering, why does this matter? Well, the media is one of the biggest influences on how we view the world and ourselves. A news story can spark national conversations. A viral TikTok can shift the way people think about therapy, and a celebrity opening up about their struggles can inspire millions to do the same. But on the flip side, mental health can also spread stigma, oversimplify serious issues, or ignore important perspectives. That's where this series comes into play. Today, we're diving into a topic that affects millions of young people every day: social media and its impact on youth mental health. Platforms like Instagram, TikTok, and Snapchat aren't just places to scroll. They're shaping self-esteem, stress levels, and even how teens perceive mental health. So whether you're a parent, a student, or just curious about the digital world around you, this episode is for you. Welcome to August 2025's Mental Health in the Media. As I am recording this, I am sipping on my 40-ounce or so sized Stanley because I actually read a story this week about how drinking water can help you feel less stressed. I know, let's unpack this. So this article was written by Daniel Kashi, who is the postdoctoral research officer, and Neil Walsh, who's an applied physiology professor, and they both are at Liverpool John Moores University. The study that was published in the Journal of Applied Physiology found that people who drank less than 1.5 liters daily, or about 50 ounces, showed dramatically higher levels of cortisol, the body's primary stress hormone, when faced with stressful situations. Cortisol is also heavily overproduced in a lot of college students. I saw this a lot when I was researching it while also being a college student. The findings suggest that chronic mild dehydration may amplify stress responses in ways we're only beginning to understand. They tested healthy young adults by dividing them into two groups based on their usual fluid intake. One group drank less than 1.5 liters, while the other group exceeded standard recommendations of roughly 2 liters for women and 2.5 liters for men. After maintaining these patterns for a week, participants faced a laboratory stress test involving public speaking and mental arithmetic. Both groups felt equally nervous and showed similar heart rate increases, but the low fluid group experienced a much more pronounced cortisol surge, a response that could prove problematic if repeated daily, especially over months or years. Chronic elevation of cortisol has been linked to increased risks of heart disease, kidney problems, and even diabetes. The mechanism behind the stress amplification involves the body's sophisticated water management system. When dehydration is detected, the brain releases vasopressin, a hormone that instructs the kidneys to conserve water and maintain blood volume. But vasopressin doesn't work in isolation. It also influences the brain's stress response system, potentially heightening cortisol release during difficult moments. The effect of all of this, it actually creates a physiological double burden. Although vasopressin helps preserve precious water, it simultaneously makes the body more reactive to stress. For someone navigating daily pressures, work deadlines, family responsibilities, tests and exams, and homework after homework, this heightened reactivity could accumulate into significant health harms over time. They found that you should add hydration to the growing list of lifestyle factors that can influence stress resilience. Sleep, exercise, nutrition, and social connections all play roles in how we handle life's challenges. Water now emerges as a potentially underappreciated ally in stress management. I can confidently say after reading this article, I have not stopped drinking my water, and it's definitely a placebo effect, but I feel a lot less stressed. So now that we've set the stage for how mental health has actually shown up in the media recently, let's zoom in on one of the biggest influences in young people's lives today: social media. Platforms like Instagram, TikTok, and Snapchat, they aren't just entertainment anymore. They're shaping the way that we connect with others, how we perceive ourselves, and even how we talk about mental health. So here's a big question. Is social media helping this conversation or hurting it? LifeStance Health wrote an article called Navigating Mental Health in the Age of Social Media. They surveyed 1,110 US adults. Social media is a pervasive presence in our daily lives. What can I say? I am definitely, quote unquote, chronically online. 26% of respondents check social media within 5 minutes of waking up, and that same portion spend 4 hours or more on social media every day. Definitely can admit I've been guilty of this. 29% of respondents report being constantly connected to the internet or social media. Gen Z, which was 45%, and millennial respondents, which was 39%, are most likely to be constantly connected compared to the respondents from the Gen X, which was 25%, and baby boomers, which was 14% of this survey. Against this backdrop, more than 57% of respondents identify with the term chronically online, meaning they believe the term accurately describes their relationship with social media, including 80% of Gen Z and 69% of millennial respondents. So more than 1 in 5 respondents report experiencing negative impacts on their mental health as a result of this chronically online connectivity. This is felt most amongst the youngest generations, jumping to 28% for Gen Z respondents. Nearly 1/4 of respondents have sought mental health advice on social media. This jumps to 55% for Gen Z and 30% for millennial respondents. When asked why, 45% say they have turned to social media for mental health advice due to its convenience and immediacy. Other factors included wanting to hear from others with similar experiences and knowing you're not alone, a desire to find anonymous advice, and the quality of care available on social media platforms. Some people felt like they needed to turn to social media because of the cultural stigma around seeking professional help. 81% of respondents do not believe mental health content on social media is an adequate replacement for therapy. However, opinions vary by generation. 42% of Gen Z respondents believe it is an adequate replacement, compared to just 3% with baby boomers. With the prevalence of non-clinical sources sharing mental health information online, the need for accessible, high-quality care provided by licensed clinicians is crucial to help decipher fact from fiction and develop a clinically appropriate treatment plan. Each year, I've looked at the stats from the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and in the state of Florida, where I currently reside, over 7.8 million people do not have access to professional resources and mental health-based clinicians and care. So I can see where people are using social media to fill in that gap, but it can be harmful in different ways. All right, please excuse my terrible British accent, but we are on our way to the UK. There was a recent UK investigation that found 97% of Instagram Reels and 96% of TikTok algorithmic recommendations to teen-like accounts actually contained harmful content and often referencing self-harm or trigger warning suicide. These posts reached huge audiences. 1 in 10 harmful videos on TikTok's For You page had been liked at least 1 million times. And on Instagram Reels, 1 in 5 harmful recommended videos had been liked more than 250,000 times. So those were some of the findings of potentially harmful side effects of using social media, especially for our younger audiences. They're actively seeing potentially harmful content on their day-to-day scroll. All right, now we're going straight from the UK to Australia, mate. Oh, my Lantis. Somebody needs to take this mic away from me. And I apologize for the accent once again. But now we are in Australia, where the Mission Australia surveyed 17,480 young people across Australia, ages 15 to 19. And they decided to do this survey because of the very public debate over restricting access to social media for people aged under 16. A ban on under 16-year-olds from social media, including TikTok, Snapchat, and Instagram, is actually due to come into effect in December in Australia. Mission Australia's survey showed moderate social media usage, 1 to 3 hours a day was linked to better well-being among teens, but the higher usage you had, the more you were likely to feel distressed. They found that 97% of young people reported using social media every day, and 38% spending 3 or more hours per day, with 53% spending 1 to 3 hours per day. Teenagers who use social media between 1 and 3 hours per day reported feeling more in control of their lives, compared to the low users and high users. Moderate users were also just as likely to seek help from parents as low users compared with high users, and reported less difficulty in socializing than low users. So we can see where social media feels like such a connecting piece with other students, but if you have too little of that interaction and too much of that interaction, it can play a large part in your mental well-being. Those who reported higher social media also reported worse mental health and well-being. They felt negative about the future, felt like they had no control over their lives, and felt more lonely. The report suggested moderation was key when it came to social media usage, arguing moderate users of social media tend to fare better or very similar to low users. This indicates that social media is not in itself a problem for all young people, but can easily lead to being a problem. This episode is all about the statistics and studies that are happening present day around our world right now. I will say that I have seen both sides of the social media spectrum, ones where I was not involved at all, times where I was overly involved, and times where I've gone viral and then gotten no views, and times where I had no views and felt happier than when I was viral. And I will do a whole podcast episode on going viral and the effects that it had on my life, but social media has a mixed impact, and I've seen this. You can have harmful algorithms, and luckily I haven't seen a lot of that content, but you also have so much potential to connect with people that you never had until social media was a thing. So it really is a double-edged sword. We see media narratives that often focus on the fear behind all of it, the crisis and the negativities, as a lot of these articles showed, but I would love to see more articles that showcase the recovery or the systematic solutions, just like drinking more water. There are a lot of structural issues aside from social media, like lack of access to the internet, financial stresses, global disparities that also shape the mental health conversation, and we'll dive deeper more into those in the future. There's definitely a lot of ways to bring hope into the social media spectrum. I think it's first focusing on being a moderate user instead of spending every waking second doom scrolling and being on that app, and maybe challenge yourself this week to not wake up and go on your phone immediately. I'm going to challenge myself to do that. I know I'm guilty of it. But find media that uplifts you, or do your research and find media that educates you, just like these articles. Listen to my podcast, tune in every month, and I will educate you more on what's happening present day with mental health. So that wraps up this month's episode of Mental Health in the Media. Today we explored social media and its contributions to youth mental health, looking at how platforms can both connect and challenge young people, and what the latest research tells us about its impact on well-being. If you found this episode helpful, subscribe so you never miss a monthly dive into mental health. Share it with friends, leave a review, or send me your thoughts. I'd love to hear your perspective. And on that note, stay tuned to see what topic we cover next month. Please feel free to comment on stories or topics we should feature in the future. Remember, your crown never really falls. It just slips sometimes. I'll see you next week. Until then, no misbehaving.